Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our city council meeting this evening, February 13th, 2012. Pleased that everyone is here, and we thank you for being here. And as we go through our agenda, if you'd like to speak on an issue on our agenda, you certainly may do so. Just raise your hand at the appropriate time. We'll recognize you so that you can come up and speak. And all we need is your name, please, for the record. And as we begin our meeting, we will have a council prayer and Pledge of Allegiance.
Father in heaven, as we turn our eyes, our hearts toward you this evening, we come to you with thanksgiving in our hearts for your goodness, your grace, your mercy, your love that you show to us in so many ways. We thank you for life. We thank you for liberty. We thank you for allowing us to live in this land of the free. We thank you for our federal government, our state government, our city government, the fact that you allow us to have a part in what our nations, our states, our cities become. As we debate the issues this evening, we ask for clearness of thought, for oneness of spirit, that things that are done in this room tonight, as we conclude, we would be able to say that it is for the betterment of our city, our citizens, and that you would be honored and glorified. We ask these things in his name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary to the agenda this evening?
Mayor, under the old business line item number 3, that was second reading and a public hearing of an ordinance to rezone 18.85 acres on South Carolina Highway 19 north of University Parkway as residential multifamily high density. The owners of that property have called and asked to carry this matter over to a future council meeting. In light of the materials that were received by the residents in the area, they want an opportunity to review that and potentially modify their request, potentially for a different zoning designation, but that's all under review at this time. We did contact everyone who spoke at the public hearing last time when this was on for first reading, and they had no objection to that and just wanted to be notified when the item was brought back, which, of course, we'll do.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I have one item for issue and concern. Clarity on the use of recuse here at City Council versus at Aiken Corp. And Mr. Smith and I have had some emails on that, and just a little clarification at the end of the meeting, please.
Okay, put it under petitions and requests.
Issue and concern, yes, sir.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, I just have a question regarding a comment in the Arts Commission minutes that we received for the meeting on January 3rd. Just a quick question of clarification.
Okay, Arts Commission. Okay.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, sir.
If I could, please. We have a very special guest with us in council chambers this evening, and I would like to take just a few minutes to introduce her to you and to the rest of council, if I may.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Julian, would you come forward, please? I'm pleased to introduce to y'all tonight Julia Wofford. She's 15-year-old and a freshman at Aiken High School. She had won a preliminary pageant this fall that allows her to represent Aiken in the Miss South Carolina Teen Pageant in Columbia this coming July. So we're thrilled to have her representing our great city there. She, as a platform, is developing the platform for children with learning disabilities, such as dyslexia. She dances with the Aiken Civic Ballet. and has danced since the age of four with them, and that will be her talent in the state pageant. And then she's involved also, Mr. Mayor, in two tutoring, mentoring programs, both here in Aiken as well as in Augusta. She can often be seen at some of the car shows, and she likes to hang around there because she hopes that her very first car is a 67 Mustang. So we'll see if that comes true, but part of her heart is also with the people of Haiti, which she and her father have gone on mission trips to a little over a year ago, and they certainly hope to be able to go back soon. She is a member of the First Presbyterian Church in Augusta. I think Julia may have just a little something that she'd like to say.
As Mr. Wells said, I'm Julia Harrison Wofford, and I'm the reigning Miss Aiken County Teen South Carolina, and I'm having the opportunity of representing our wonderful county in the state pageant this summer. And I just wanted to share with y'all a little bit what that means for me and what the competition will consist of. The teen pageant, we are asked to compete in every division that the Miss contestants are. And the divisions include interview, onstage question, and evening wear, and sportswear, and a platform. And the platform division is very special to my heart because, as Mr. Wells said, I want to represent children with learning disabilities because when I was younger learning to read, I couldn't read till the age of 11. And I'm only 15 now, so you can do the math. I've had a few years, very short years of catching up. But I think that I can make a difference in young children's hearts and even older children just to, if I can read and make that huge jump that I've made that so many other children can. And I just want to make a difference. And I want the city of Aiken to help support me and help me in my journey and my goal as being Miss Teen South Carolina.
Julia, that's wonderful, and thank you for what you will be doing, especially for the young people, for the kids. And we wish you well, and pray that God will be with you as you go through this. And before you leave, I know you have to run off, right, to do something else special. But if you would just kind of walk around and let us shake your hand, and we'd be honored to do that.
Thank you.
Would you do that?
Mr.
Others
Mayor,
may have something too.
Mr. Mayor, also I would like to, for her parents to stand up, Trey and Melanie Wofford. I know they're very proud.
Absolutely.
Mr. Mayor, she's also recently been charged. Been crowned Miss Freshman at Aiken High School. Yes.
Mayor, one thing I needed to put in the record, too, I have to admire Julia's aspirations because of 1966 Carolina Gamecock Garnet, white top, black pony interior Mustang is on my wife's finger because I got her an engagement ring instead. Now, that ring's lasted 30 years this coming June, so we'll see how you do with your car.
Just add that I had a 64 Mustang at one time, bright yellow, and I wish I still had it. That's for sure. Well, you can stay or you can leave whenever you desire.
Well, Mr. Mayor,
yes, sir.
Before we get too far, I'd like to say something about the Airport Commission and Larry Morris. And all the people associated with getting the instrument landing system in effect at Aiken Airport. Hopefully it's going to be an incentive for larger aircraft, more corporate aircraft to come into Aiken, because we've got one of the best facilities out there. If you've never been out there, take about 30 minutes and go out there. It's a great facility. And I just want to commend the people that worked for 10, 12 years, you included, Mr. Mayor, on making it a reality. As a pilot, I love it.
Well, thank you, Steve, for that. There have been an awful lot of people that worked on that over the years. certainly. Our former city manager, Roger LeDuc, did an awful lot on that also, working to get it going. It just takes a long, long time. We're working with the federal government and other agencies, so we're glad that it's finally here and it worked fine. And I asked, I was riding, Steve was nice enough to ask me to go up on that morning, and I wish you'd schedule a little later instead of 5:30 getting up, but anyway. And while we were up in the air, I asked him, I said, Steve, how old is your plane? And he said, 1962. I said, oh my goodness. But it was perfect, and I appreciate that ride very much. Okay, anything else?
I move we accept the agenda as revised.
I'll second.
Second, okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. Okay, passes unanimously. On the minutes, consideration of the minutes of January 23rd, 2012, regular meeting minutes, and the Horizons meeting minutes of January 27th and 28th, 2012. Any discussion necessary?
Mr. Mayor, there's a large segment of the minutes of our last council meeting on January 23rd involving the discussion on the Aiken Corporation loan that have not been included, and I would ask that they be included.
Okay. All right.
If it'll help, Council Mayor, the complete discussion in the meeting is available on the city website. We post the audio of all meetings there, so it can be listened to in detail at our city website.
But we will add that portion to the minutes otherwise, right? Is that what you're looking
yes.
for? Paper copy?
Yes. In the written minutes, yes.
Okay. Okay.
Is that a transcript, Mayor, just so we know exactly?
Well, let's see with what Mr. DeWall.
Well, I don't think we've ever done a transcript. I've advocated that. I've introduced a company that does that. There may be some budget issues and so forth. I think it's much better when we do an actual transcript. But we have generally had a summary. Mm-hmm. My concern in this case is it's one thing to leave a paragraph or a comment off, but it was a large segment of that meeting. I'm not sure how long, probably 20, 30 minutes. It just was not included. So, and I think it should be. And since you raised it, I would advocate that we work towards a goal of putting out a transcript so people know exactly what we say and what we discuss.
Okay, sir.
I'm curious, just so Ms. Rideout knows, if it's council's desire to adopt Mr. Duar's amendment to the minutes, can we be more specific as to what we're talking about?
What needs to be included?
I'm not sure I understand what you're asking her to.
On page 5. Just
one second. The Mayor, just to add for council's benefit, again, a transcript is just words on paper. The audio is available so folks can listen to the exact tone, intonation of what was said in the meeting. And that we've made that available for several years now. So, I mean, any citizen can obtain the exact conversation in audio.
Is that
the comments that were omitted? Were, if you look at page 5 of the minutes, probably between the second and the third paragraph. And again, it's we're just out of the norm. We're away from where we have been in putting out the minutes, and I've never had to make this request before beyond some perfunctory comments of minute changes, but I just feel that the minutes should be as accurate as we can make them and as accurate as they have been recently.
Mm-hmm. Okay, does that square with everybody? Do we know it?
Are you advocating putting the transcript between the second and third paragraph? Or what?
No, I'm not advocating a transcript, Steve, as much as I would like to see a transcript. I'm advocating that we do what we've always done. And I think go through the audio and summary of what has occurred. I mean, that's what the minutes all reflect.
The review of the negative comments.
Hmm?
You want to review?
Actually spell out the review of the negative comments instead of just refer to it.
Yes.
Let's put it in another way. It's part of the minutes. It's part of what we said.
Yeah,
so why would anything be left out, really? I understand what you're saying.
No intent to leave anything out, Mayor. We just typically the minutes have been summary. We can go back and summarize. We do whatever council needs us to do as far as a detail of the actual meeting content, short of a transcript. We have the audio on the website, so anyone can listen to that anytime that's convenient for them.
Well, one of the things about a transcript, sometimes we misspeak ourselves. I'm very happy to have it cleaned up by the city clerk so it don't look like something else. But I understand what you're driving at.
And please understand, I'm not inferring that anything was done on purpose. I mean, we've had so many long discussions, and it's easy to see how something could be left out. But since we know it, something was left out, certainly ought to be put back in, I feel. And I think we all agree to that, probably. Okay, under presentations, we have one.
I think you need a motion. Did I do?
I sure do.
Move to adopt.
Okay, I'm getting so excited about the next item. Do we have a motion in the second to approve?
I move to approve the minutes as amended with the relevant section that you referred to.
Second.
Okay, we have a second. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor. Passes unanimously. Okay, now presentations. Proposed schedule to reapportion the city council districts. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Jim Holly, attorney, is back with us tonight to go over potential redistricting of our council districts. The citizens adopted at referendum last November a 6-1 plan. Jim's been in contact with the Budget Control Board Office of Research and Statistics to come up with a potential plan that would comply with DOJ mandates and reflect a division based on our population increase. He's here tonight to talk about that and to talk about a potential path forward as we look at finalizing the 6-1 plan for future council elections. With that, we'll turn it over to you, Jim, at this time. Stuart, could you get the phone cord? Where's that first?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Nice to see all of you again.
Thank you, Jim.
Excuse my voice tonight. I'm battling something. Not sure what, but...
Going around.
Yes. And if you don't understand something I say, please let me know, and I'll be glad to repeat it. I broke this presentation down. I'll try to keep it brief to three different sections. One is the one section consists of a first draft of a map as well as the statistics for a 6-1 plan. The second would be the implementation schedule as far as elections are concerned. And then the third section would be just the process sort of from tonight forward in that order. The map, I think it's in your agenda package, and on the easels, and it may magically appear on the screen right now. This map was prepared by the Office of Research and Statistics under the guidance of Bobby Bowers, who y'all are familiar with and is an expert across the country in redistricting. And they took the criteria that the courts look for and the Department of Justice looks for in drawing a plan, as well as the proper goal of ensuring that an incumbent council members to the extent feasible are not placed in the same district. And as you see, this plan has six districts, and there is one resident incumbent council member in each of the six districts. The statistics that go with this, I believe you also have, and the statistics from my perspective, are very good. One of the objectives we have is to ensure that the constitutional requirement of one person, one vote is respected. Therefore, that each of the six districts has to have a roughly equivalent population. And the objective is to keep the deviation between the most populated district and the least populated district based on the 2010 census to less than 5% if at all feasible. This particular plan has statistics that keep that deviation below 3.5, as I recall, which is very good. Also, the districts are set up to be as contiguous as reasonably possible and to reflect communities of interest by the neighborhoods that are in each district. That is really a quick overview of the map. Again, this is just a starting point for council and citizens to look at over the coming weeks, but it was drawn by the experts, if you will. And if council or citizens want to suggest, you know, revisions to it, certainly that's something that can be considered as long as we keep it within the parameters of what the courts require and what the Department of Justice requires under the Voting Rights Act. Are there any questions about the map or the statistics? I would say that, you know, one of the objectives is to maintain the two minority districts, and the numbers on each of those districts are strong, in my opinion. Both the overall population of District 1 is minority population is over 62%, and in District 2 over 65%. Then the voting age population in District 1 is almost 59%, and then in District 2 over 62%.
Jim, you might talk about the timing.
Okay.
Before we leave the maps, Mr. Holly, when you submitted the request for the 6-1 versus the 4-2-1, was the Plan 3 map and those numbers submitted as part of that application? Or so the Justice Department hadn't seen this, because this map and stuff is what you gave us back early last year or late last year.
It should be the same or similar. Again, it was just the first step you went through was the referendum, and the holding of the referendum was what the Justice Department approved.
All right, so they didn't see any of these numbers yet, even though you gave us essentially the same numbers back there. All right, thank you.
Yes, sir.
I have a couple of questions on the map. I understand that we have the flexibility, and not having ever been through this process, how exactly does that work? Would we respond to a citizen, for example, who might want to, obviously would have to be on a borderline, and would want to say, well, I'd rather be in this district than that district, or a council member who laments losing one district, one street, or what have you? I mean, how does that process work?
Each, if there's such a request, each one has to be reviewed by the demographers first of all, they need to be reviewed by council, perhaps, to get some input on whether, from your perspective, it is reasonable. Then the demographers, Mr. Bowers and his staff, would have to review how it affects the numbers, both minority population numbers, the deviation number, the equivalent population that's in each district. Each district's deviation is based on the deviation of that population from an ideal district, which is total population divided by 6. They would look at it, and then your attorney would look at it to make sure the change would not adversely affect the ability of the plan to be approved by the Department of Justice, and that it's consistent with the legal parameters of one person, one vote. So you have to do it step by step if there's a suggested change. And also, if you do make a change, changes along the process, the Justice Department might require each change to be explained and justified.
Okay, and the next question, at the present time, I could ask our city clerk to give me a map, and it would be much bigger than what we have here. You probably know the size I'm speaking about, and it would outline my district by street, I mean, to the point that you could actually read it. And I know trying to put 6 districts in a map on this size paper is almost impossible.
Will she have enough data to be able to do that for us so that, for example, under the new District 3, I could see clearly where my boundaries would be and what streets would be included?
Well, we certainly have phone car model if you streets? Want to take it with you. It's on this big board that's on the phone cord. You could certainly use that.
Well, oh, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's right on the easel on the other side. It's 24 by 36.
And it's a large version?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right.
And we can get a copy from the city clerk on that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Before we leave the map, right there at Brookhaven and Spencer, where the mall is and Lowe's, I assume that's contiguous. I mean, is Whiskey contiguous? Because that's the only thing that makes it, and the map is small. If you look where Brookhaven is and the orange and the green.
That section of Highway 19, which is Whiskey Road,
is that
from
in the
East
city?
Pine Log to Talatha Church Road is in the city.
So that's officially in the city, and so it's contiguous by the right-of-way of the road?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
All right, very good.
As far as redistricting, you can, not talking annexations, but redistricting, if there's a natural feature or some gap, you can cross that for contiguity for redistricting purposes,
okay,
as long as it's rational.
Okay, thank you. It just, I know we had several people come up and speak about Whiskey Road before, and I wanted to be sure we didn't get all down the road and this thing backfire on us or something. Okay, thank you.
And of course, Mr. Bowers and I can meet with council as requested to discuss details. The next section of the presentation to talk about is the potential implementation of an election schedule. And I think you have perhaps have a draft of that material. And the approach that would appear to be the one that would be most considered by council would be to implement the 6-1 plan in a manner that does not disrupt the existing terms of office of council members who have been elected, and it would keep the election cycle the same with election every 4 years. And this is similar to the process that we used, or plan we used, after the 2000 census. And so the first general election under the new plan, assuming you take that approach, would be in November of 2013, in which districts 2, 4, 5, and 6, the new districts, would be up for election. And then in November of 2015, the mayor and districts 1 and 3 would be up for election, because you just had an election for mayor and districts 1 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, again, council has the option of other approaches. This is the one that was used in 2000, and I think it's been used even before that, to try to keep the election schedule the same and the terms of office the same. And if that's the plan that council wishes to go to, it would be incorporated into the ordinance, which creates this, whatever the final 6-1 plan is, creates that, assigns the districts, and it also would have the election schedule. And I think it might be necessary to thereby amend one of the permanent city code sections that may have the election schedule in it. But you just have to adopt one ordinance.
Okay. Probably given the timetable and barring no concerns that would require you to go back and forth to the Department of Justice, well, what sort of time frame, once the Justice Department decides that this is a good plan to approve, can we expect to hear from them by the end of the year, possibly? Or
well, there's time for council to consider the matter. Mm-hmm. The whole process would take roughly 5 to 6 months,
okay,
and still be finished in time if there's a problem. Which I'm not aware of any that might surface, that if one does surface from the Justice Department, for example, it's time to look at it and take appropriate action, moving district boundaries or something of that nature. But if I have If you start, let me first say what the elements of that process would be.
Jim, excuse me a minute. Yes, it's right here, right?
Yes, sir.
We've got a copy of what you're going to go over.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay, but for citizens, it's important so that they understand.
That's what it is.
Can we pull page 63, Mr. Ryan?
And again, this is what I'd call a pro forma, just a proposal, mm-hmm. because we're already, I think, offered a little bit. But the elements that you need to look at would be first adopting a resolution that sets forth the redistricting criteria. Yep. It'd be very similar to the one you adopted during the summer when we went through the referendum process. It's a boilerplate type, one-page resolution that just states the criteria that you'll use. Next, I would suggest before council has a first reading that it have one or more public hearings and ask the citizens, invite the citizens in to review and comment on the plans. You know, it's possible to have that in different locations in the city if you so choose, but that's something important to build the record that we present to the Department of Justice that this was a fair and open process. Once those hearings are concluded, then there'd be first reading and the second reading, then submission to the Justice Department, and they, once they receive it, they have 60 days. If everything goes well, 60 days to issue what they call a no objection letter, which means it's pre-cleared and you can implement. So if we started, assuming you had all the public hearings during February and the beginning of March, and then had first reading on March 12, you could theoretically receive the pre-clearance letter from the Justice Department by the middle of July. Now, that's a fairly aggressive schedule, and it hinges to some extent on how many public hearings you have and how much they're spread apart. But once those are completed, the process should go fairly smoothly with first and second reading, and then after second reading, you really need, if you can, about 2 weeks to get the material together. There's a lot of material that we compile to give the Department of Justice, which is very important in the process because you don't want them to look through it halfway and then say, oh, well, you left out this and that. The 60 days starts again. Mm-hmm. So we try to prepare it preventatively and make sure we've given everything they could possibly need to review. So that would be the process schedule, if you will. I think it would be helpful if you could conclude it well before the end of the current calendar year. Maybe that's too long, but, you know, so that you have plenty of time to deal with any complications that may arise.
And one thing that I didn't ask, we, of course, with our strategic plan update, we did do public hearings, and we did an online survey. We had, you know, many multiples of online participants as opposed to public hearings like tonight's meeting. Would DOJ accept that?
I believe they would, certainly. Yeah, okay. Any form of public input,
right.
As long as we can tie it back to a person,
yes.
in an address, et cetera.
We can.
Yeah. And so I think the purpose of the presentation tonight was to share this information, answer any questions you may have, and then give you all the opportunity to decide what schedule you want to follow. I'll be glad to answer any of the questions you may have.
Just one general question. It's more for staff than it is for you, Mr. Hawley. When this all gets done, do we get a database of the people that are in our districts? Right now, we have to pay to get that, but in light of redistricting, is that something that we can be provided? Has it been provided in the past?
Only two of you have been through this before. Yeah, I'd have to check.
Okay.
Just to see. Right. I mean, a digital version is acceptable.
Yeah.
Okay. We can just see.
That'd be nice.
What do we need to do tonight now? Do we need to approve the November 13th District 2, 4, 5, and 6 and mm-hmm. let Mr. Pierce set up a public hearing, or public hearings, I should say?
I don't know that we need actual approval tonight as much as this is for information. We'll go forward unless there are major concerns with any item you've heard tonight. We'll go ahead and schedule it.
So you'll go ahead and do the scheduling and propose it to us. Very good. I just want to be sure we didn't miss something tonight.
No. Right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Jim, on a personal note, we've had a lot of interaction with you over the years, and certainly as our general counsel on city council, but you've moved to bigger things in the state of South Carolina. You have a wonderful experience here with these statistics and what you're doing for other communities, other city councils throughout the state, and certainly you have a reputation of doing this fairly. So I want to thank you and applaud you for what you've done, and we'll get back with you. But thanks very much.
Thank you.
We hope you feel better too, Jim.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay. Under old business, first item, appointments to boards, commissions, and committees.
Thank you, Mayor. You've got 16 pending at this time. Mayor, you recommended the appointment of Phyllis Black Sorensen to the Park Commission to replace Karen Papachato. If appointed, that term would expire December 1st, 2013. Councilmember Homoki recommended the appointment of Regina Brackett to the Accommodations Tax Committee to replace Bill Thomason. That term would expire March 25, 2013. He also recommended Robert Newbern to the Park Commission to replace Margaret Marion. That term would expire December 1, 2013. He has recommended the appointment of Dr. Kent Cubbage to the Environmental and Energy Committee to replace Dacre Stoker. That term would expire December 13, 2013. For council consideration tonight is approval of these four appointments to the boards and commissions as set forth.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and a second?
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve the four appointments.
I second.
Okay. Any questions? Any comments? If not, show hands, please. Passage unanimously. Okay. Item two, second reading.
Mr. Mayor.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Have some others.
Go ahead.
I'd like to recommend an appointment tonight, Josh Stewart, to the DRB. He is an engineer.
And we have a write-up. Each one has a form. Any other nominations that will appear next meeting on that agenda? Okay. Thank you. Item two, the second reading public hearing on ordinance to amend the comprehensive land use and transportation plan to incorporate the Union Street area plan. Here's please.
Thank you, Mayor. This plan came as an action item in council's joint meeting with the Planning Commission, and you approved by the budget funding for a consultant, Ali's Collaboration, to facilitate public sessions and gather input from citizens. A draft plan was prepared that was reviewed by the Planning Commission in compliance with our zoning ordinance. In addition, there was an October open house held downstairs in the conference center. It was also made available on our city website. There was a follow-up meetings with members of Friendship Baptist Church. And again, the Planning Commission met on December 13, 2011, considered the draft plan. We have a copy of that attached to the materials we filed tonight. Council approved on first reading at the January 9th meeting the adoption of this plan and incorporating it in the comprehensive plan. The ordinance that's before you tonight for second reading is an ordinance amending the City of Aiken Comprehensive Land Use and Transportation Plan to incorporate the Union Street area plan. At the request of Second Baptist, we did include some additional properties, and that was the delay from January 9 through today. There were about five or six properties, as I recall, that were added to the plan. We advertised that, posted it, and as far as I know, have not received any comment from the public regarding that. So for consideration tonight is second reading and public hearing on the ordinance amending the comprehensive land use and transportation plan to include this area in it.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing, so if anyone in the audience would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. Yes, sir.
This works, but probably don't did it. My name is Lee Dvoryanin, Dvorjanyn. I'm a retired engineer from Savannah Riverside. And since I retired, I was always looking towards the city, moving into the city, and enjoying the benefits of being in the city, the library, walking. So I was very interested in the plan and the Union Street revitalization. And I was interested in the vision that was reported in this plan. It includes many, many items. It's pretty complicated. But instead of a plan, it also includes specific rezoning, which doesn't seem to be really part of a plan. Maybe it's just my interpretation, but when you're actually implementing something, then it's not a plan. A plan is what we would like it to look like. And the specific things are that in that rezoning, there is an area which is described on page 29, block 113, which includes four units built right outside the old house, Harry Petter's house, which simply is not consistent to beautify this area. It's blocking a historic house, it's obstructing the view, and it's building little units, which is more like HUD-type units, in the middle of an area which we're trying to beautify. So it really doesn't seem to be compatible with the plan to attract more businesses and more people to this area. From the design point of view, the drawings that are shown on page 29 of the plan, the boundaries, they encroach on the boundaries of the buildings. There is a parking lot. There are other considerations. There is right of way for the railroad. The engineering portion of this design that was included in this plan does not seem to, it's simply not correct. I talked with Harry Petters, and he prepared a summary of various issues, and I'd like to pass it on to the committee to review rather than spend the time here. It's to do with the fact that the plan takes land, other land that's not owned by anybody else, and it's just not a good plan for this area. That's my feeling. And I'd like to pass that on, plus a more detailed explanation, I think, would be the easiest rather than me trying to explain it.
Certainly, sir. Thank yes, sir. You certainly can.
Whom shall I pass it on to?
Just to pass it around here if you want. And
the city clerk will need a copy, too.
Just my comments.
We can make a copy, too, unless he has an extra.
Is that an extra copy, sir? Is that an extra?
I have two copies. I gave one here, and I have an extra copy.
Could you give that to the city clerk, your extra copy, just so we can put it in the record? The city clerk's right here.
Okay, I will do that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you for your comment, sir. Okay, sure.
Good evening. I'm Bill McGee, and I live at 217 Fairview Street Northeast. And Bob Conway and I are here to discuss the boundaries of the Union Street plan. We met with the city manager last week, and our major concern, I guess, is the plan or the envisioned heritage walk. And with the current boundaries of this plan, two very important African-American sites are missing. The current plan starts at Richland and York, goes down to the depot, and then over to Cumberland and Friendship churches. Okay. The two sites I reference are the Schofield Normal and Industrial School, present Schofield Middle School, and then the location at Abbeville and Kershaw and Sumter of the Smith-Hazel Recreation Center. The Smith-Hazel Recreation Center replaced the old segregated, colored Aiken Elementary School. I attended that school many years ago through the third grade. Okay. I think, and we think, that if we're going to have a heritage walk in the north side of Aiken, which encompasses one of the major original grids of the city that was predominantly African-American in the early 1900s, that it should include these two sites. If you extend those boundaries to as far north as Smith-Hazel, then you're talking about going all the way to Hampton Avenue, okay? And if you go to Hampton Avenue north on Sumter and Kershaw and even Fairfield Street and Union, you have a blighted area that the city has really not helped the neighborhood improve over the years. We came to the city as a community organization back in the fall of 2003 and asked the city for some assistance in revitalizing that area. And the plan that you have now basically is just a small portion of what we asked the city to help us with as a community organization. The city at that time said that they had other priorities, and they have moved to improve the conditions in Tool Hill, Crosland Park, and I guess Edgewood. But we still feel that there's a blighted area around the depot, and if you're going to have a heritage walk, and if you're going to encourage tourism in that area, you have to look at infrastructure type improvements on Fairfield, Union, Kershaw, and Sumter North blocks to Hampton Avenue, and also the safety in that neighborhood. It's not the most safe neighborhood, even though I live there, in this community. So our request would be that you extend the boundaries from Park Avenue, a south boundary, north up to Hampton Avenue, which would include those two historic sites that I mentioned, and also would help to improve, and we think, make this Home Depot, I mean, it's not Home Depot, but the depot, the Union Street plan, much more successful.
The Heritage Walk is on page 143 of your agenda packet.
Bill, just a question, please. Was this input that you're giving us now, was that given to the committee early on?
I verbally gave it to the committee at the first meeting they had at the depot, in I think a couple years ago, downtown. I did not put it in writing. At the time, I think I was the only representative there from Cumberland AME Church. I asked if anyone at the city had talked to, or the consultant had spoken to anybody at Cumberland. And they said yes, that I think they'd talked to Beverly or someone at the church, I'm not sure. And since we had a new pastor at that time, they got the information in the surrounding areas from Beverly, I guess it was, Mrs. Clyburn.
Mr. McGee, is it your desire that the actual heritage interpretive walk be extended?
Yes.
As opposed to the actual area where the charrette was done? I mean, I can't see skipping over a large portion of property to include those two, but as far as just including that in the downtown heritage interpretive walk, I don't see where that would be a problem to extend the walk to include Schofield as well as Smith Hazel.
Okay, well, yeah. And my only point is that if we agree that those two sites are historic enough to be included in the Heritage Walk, okay, then I think the city should help us, that neighborhood, to enhance that whole that neighborhood and to help us improve the blightedness in that neighborhood.
Mr. McGee?
Mr. Mayor, if I can, page 144, if you look at the top, that talks about the Union City area, that the walk should to link with other cultural resources in and near downtown, such as the Schofield Middle School. So that's in that page on 144, and extending it over to Smith Hazel is not that far. You're only talking about a block. Mm-hmm. In terms of including that. The second portion of that deals with what the city has done in terms of improving neighborhoods. And certainly this goes back years ago with our attempt to try to improve blighted areas in this town. Tools Hill, at the time that the work began, was done in what I would label as a spotty fashion. We did one house here and one house there. We couldn't see any real impact, so we made a unified decision as a body to go after that community in a holistic approach where we did improvements in the entire neighborhood. That took a while to get done. Mm-hmm. But we had already been to Chesterfield North before doing Schofield. Tools Hill. Tools Hill came second. And then we worked with the Aiken Housing Authority to try to improve the housing area immediately around the Smith Hazel Center. And then we got concerns from the trailer scale in your
area. Ashton Oaks.
So it went to Ashton Oaks and did some improvements there. Then Edgewood. And so we're moving about through neighborhoods, improving those neighborhoods. We have not overlooked that area at all. It's just that we just haven't been able to do a holistic approach totally to these areas because we're taking area by area. And I think we can see some change there, but that area has not, it's neglected and it needs work, but we haven't overlooked that area.
Well, it's our contention that if this area is included in this plan, mm-hmm. okay, then it will not be overlooked this time. Okay.
But you're saying it was overlooked in the past?
It has been, yes. You said it too. It has been. Mm-hmm. There are other priorities, okay?
Based on reports of crime.
Light and so forth,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mr. McGee, I got a question. You know, the Union Street improvement area is fairly compact. By increasing the size, do you feel maybe you're going to dilute the effort and getting it done, or do you think it can be done at the same time? Because if you expand it too much, you know, you're going to expend a lot of energy and development, you know, and you know, it's kind of a big thing. Union Street is kind of compact, and maybe, you know, if we get that done, you know, take a look at doing another section of town.
Well, yes, sir, I understand what you're saying, but remember that we said we were here in 203, okay, 204, and we were told the same thing, that there were other priorities, higher crime areas or what have you. Okay? And I guess our contention is now that if you go ahead with this narrow, concentrated area, okay, the immediate adjacent areas are not going to be addressed. And we think that if we're going to have people walking in those neighborhoods, okay, to encourage the tourism and the cultural experience and so forth, that some consideration should be done for sidewalks, okay, lighting, okay, blighted homes and so forth, vacant lots, all right, and then the safety.
And Mayor, if it'll help City Council, you know, certainly we have been doing that kind of work in the Schofield area. The housing authority homes or apartments that are immediately adjacent to Schofield, just south of the campus, Kershaw Street, we rebuilt homes. It used to be Section 8 rentals. Now it's home ownership on Kershaw between Schofield and the Smith-Hazel Center. There's other work that we've done on the sidewalks, Heritage Park. I mean, we are doing work in the area. I think the concern from staff, and Mr. Evans is here, and he can talk about the scope of this. Again, this was something that we did with public notice as far as the plan study area. Just because we add this to the comprehensive plan, we can, if council wants to devote the resources, do a similar approach in the Schofield area. But we've had initial public input, a draft plan. We've had a public hearing down below on this compact area. And, of course, the ordinance is on for second reading tonight. If council, through the budget process, would want to approve funds and then meet with Planning Commission to direct them to do an additional addition to the comprehensive plan to include this area, we typically have a process for that. And we certainly can do that, and this plan certainly refers to connecting in the Schofield Middle School area, so it would seem a logical next step. But we do prefer to have the opportunity to have public input, to have the referral to the Planning Commission so that there's ample opportunity for public input on that proposed area. So that in adopting this plan tonight, that does not prevent the additional step of going north then up Human Street into this area.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mr. McGee makes some very valid points regarding the sidewalks, the lighting, the vacant lots. That area does need to be taken a look at quickly if we're going to include this with part of our plan with tourism, safety, and people walking. So I would support us taking a look at that as quickly as possible. And I'm not sure what it takes to adopt his recommendation into our plan, but I think that if we're looking for the cultural experience for the downtown area.
We're certainly in the budget process, and Mr. Evans and I will be talking about priorities in next year's budget. We can get those resources dedicated to a further study of that area, if that would be what council would care for us to do.
Well, if we vote on this for the second reading today, what prohibits us from giving somebody, the charter to take a look going north from the present area
Nothing.
And do a study?
Nothing.
I think that's probably what we need. I think we're mixing apples and oranges. I think
you are to an
extent. We've done a lot of input. We've gotten
right.
A lot of information from the citizenry. And, if we continue with this and vote on it today, it's not going to preclude it. But I think your point is valid. I think we should look at it and perhaps a follow-on plan would, go north towards Smith-Hazel and the Schofield School, right along the railroad track, if you will.
North up the railroad track, north up Union, north up Kershaw will take you right there. Absolutely will.
Mm-hmm. What has happened to that area, a lot of the families that lived there during the 60s, 50s, 60s, 40s, 50s, 60s, have moved. They've died, and children have left the area, and that area is now probably some abandoned property, some rental property. It's a mixture of things that have taken place, and certainly the neighborhood is not what it used to be in terms of that strong fiber and protecting the property in the neighborhood. So we've got to do something to correct those things.
And I think certainly the work on Kershaw Street, where you converted from rental to home ownership, and then the Stoney Farms, Stoney Coleman Apartments on Barnwell there.
That's made an improvement. Tremendous.
Good example.
The other thing that we envision, though, we envision a more cross-sectional type neighborhood, okay, mixed income, okay? And I own property there, and my parents have owned property there for years. And it seems like we want to make that a low-income area, okay? And we think it should be more mixed income, culturally mixed, too. So somehow encourage something other than Habitat homes, rental homes by the city and so forth, or Aiken Housing Authority in that neighborhood.
I will speak on that. When I look at Tool Hill and Ashton Oaks and Chesterfield Street North, those are not homes that are low income. We have a variety of professionals combined with those blue-collar workers living in those areas. And I'm quite proud of Tool Hill and Ashton Oaks and Chesterfield Street North and what that brings with the way people have moved into those places. We have had to mix that with some rental rental property. People end up owning those homes based on their financial conditions, and that has been met with great success with us, knowing that there are families that want homes but did not have the credit rating to get into those homes. So we've managed to move them into 3-4-bedroom homes.
Yeah, my only comment was the examples that the city manager mentioned basically were public type, low-income efforts and so forth. And
that's not true for the home ownership on Kershaw Street, though.
Okay.
It's not.
Right.
And certainly with the Perry Park adjacent to Schofield, you know, Schofield renovated and upgraded its facility, and then in the park, we have practice fields, a wetlands outlook, a lot of activities there that were built. That was upgraded right in the middle of the area.
Housing, private ownership.
On Kershaw Street, and then we have the park immediately adjacent to that.
Okay. Mr. McGee. Here, Fred. I don't think any of us disagree with the things you've said, but certainly that area is part of the history, and certainly parts of that need work. But I truly feel that in what we see here tonight has been over a year's work getting this together. If we stop at this point and start to add to it, that's just going to slow down the whole process, in my view. And it might even mean it'll be longer before we would get to the area that you're talking about. There's been a lot of folks that have worked on this, and unfortunately, I guess, for whatever reason, the areas you talked with were not mentioned or not brought up. There have been public meetings and all kinds of things that the city manager mentioned. And I for one, don't want to stop this. I do want to start what you're talking about, but I think it would be a mistake to stop at this point with what's already been done, and lots of folks brought it to this point. And that's just my view. I do agree with what you say, though, about that area, and I think that we can get started on that. You know.
Well, what would be the next steps then?
Sir?
If you move on this plan and approve it tonight, okay, then what are the next step in doing some of the things that we think need to be done?
I think as quickly as we can. We've got budget coming up. Right. We'll be talking about what we can do, and presumably it could be fairly soon. But I can't make a promise of that. How soon? Fairly soon is. I don't know that anybody can sitting here tonight. But at least we all have this in mind now, and that I think that's certainly something we all want to do. I haven't heard any negativity as to doing what you say. I think it's certainly needed.
But Mayor, tonight, if we did, and listening to Mr. McGee and his concerns, would it still be possible for us to include them in the walk, even if we didn't do anything else as far as housing this concern right away? Could we include them in the walk, in the Heritage Walk, since Schofield and Smith Hazel are part of that?
It's specifically history. Mentioned in the plan that you've got on page 144 of your agenda.
It's there.
It is mentioned. So, yes. The question is yes.
They will be included.
They can be, absolutely. Because that's possible.
Well, Schofield Middle is shown, but we need to extend it a block over to include Smith Hazel, and that's not too much to ask.
But I think most of us are looking at more than just adding a walk. You know, I think the next step should be we ought to seriously start looking at possibly a comprehensive plan like we have for Union Street or the Union Street, and then move it north or some other direction.
And I think that's what,
the natural progression.
I think that's what you're talking about. Same kind of thing, just let's move it north and take in the properties that should be taken in.
And I can see if Mr. McGee, based on his comment, that he was the only one represented, one voice sometimes doesn't ring as loud as 10 voices. One voice may not be heard at all. And so I can see why a comment may have gotten omitted and not to justify it at all, but we need to include the Smith Hazel into. Your family has a rich heritage in this town with good things.
Mr. McGee, we appreciate the hard work that you and your family have put into that Smith Hazel Center area, too. It has definitely not gone unnoticed over the years. I'm very much aware of the work that you've done.
Good afternoon, everyone. Travis Johnson, Kershaw Street. I just have a couple of questions about the plan. I am on 143. And by the way, I also attend Carmel AME Church. Friendship Baptist Church is on the list. And I'm looking at a couple of other churches that is on, I think, Richland also. But I'm looking at Richland and Fairfield where Wesley United Methodist Church is at.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see them in the bullet points as part of the walk. Are they excluded as part of the walk? Are they not considered heritage in the community? Or is United Methodist? Why aren't they included in the bullet points in the walk?
Wesley.
It's showing the walk going immediately beside it.
I see where they highlighted it.
Right. But that was not in the study area.
Okay.
So I think what they mentioned were the church is actually within the boundary of the study area. Mr. Evans is here. He can confirm that.
Okay. Would it be still added to the study area?
Well, no, it wouldn't. I mean, the walk portion would be.
Okay.
See, the center, the Heritage Park, Wesley United Methodist were not part of the original study area.
Okay. So, again, would it be added to it? If not, I mean, why not?
It was just not part of the original study area that council approved.
Can we add it part of the walk as a study area?
Well, it is there under the walk. The church itself, that property was not part of the Union Street plan. And that's what we were discussing with Mr. McGee earlier. There can be a future plan that would include that. It just was not in the study area.
So
the
as we walk down Richland Avenue, or I guess the study area, we're just going to walk past Wesley and the African American Culture Center and say those are just two buildings standing right there and go on or finish the walk? Or
no,
I'm just trying to get more clarification.
Yes, sir. I understand. I'm trying to meet your concerns. As you'll see, it is contemplated in the plan that there are potential opportunities for labeling and pointing out the different spots along the walk.
Okay.
So it is included in the walk.
It's
just the property itself is not in the study area.
I think what Mr. Johnson is saying, since we have All Saints Anglican Church, the Arbutin Trail, Park Avenue businesses, the Business Center, the Rail Cars and Future Enhancement, Giles Park, Cumberland AME Church, Friendship Baptist Church, that when we include Schofield, we include, although we see it on the map, Wesley United Church is shown
right
in the map.
I see it on
and the
map.
Center for African American, let's state that as a bullet as well in terms of the interpretive walk.
Right. Part of the study area. That's,
mm-hmm.
that's exactly what I mean, part of the study area.
Even.
That's exactly what I asked.
And again, that's something that has not been in the public meetings that we've done. It's just, it is incorporated the walk itself. Mr. Evans may have a better explanation as to why. But if you read the section that talks about the walk, there are labeling opportunities there as funds permit. So there's nothing that's going to exclude it from that since it is
okay
along the walk and it is on the map.
Okay. I guess two other questions. What other methods of advertising did we use to publicize the meetings besides the yard signs? Did we do any radio or print or anything like that?
I know we use the website. I know the Aiken Standard has run some feature articles. It has been on their website. I know that we posted the property with placards. We do that.
Right.
Those placards stayed up
quite
a long time.
Is there anything in the future to maybe use any, like, radio or more, you know, even more print advertisement to get more of a voice, to get more comments directly, and particularly in the two African-American concentrated areas of the city.
I mean, we certainly, as budget allows, try to use every possible method we can. We do have a Facebook account that folks can subscribe to. We do have a Twitter account that's available as well. I mean, we use a lot of outlets and do the best we can.
Is it possible that we can get, you know, future stakeholders to maybe go out and publicize the meetings a little bit more?
We're happy for anybody to spread the word. That's never a problem.
Well, Richard, look, you and I spoke several times about trying to get a list of all the neighborhood associations and civic organizations and, you know, use that as the, because you get the community leaders and they'll pass the word on to their constituents. I think that's one of the things we've got to take a look at.
And we do that. We do that, yeah.
Do you have this copy at all?
I have that copy.
Okay.
And I'm looking at, like that, I said before.
The second sentence, the Heritage Walk has the potential to be a tremendous asset to Aiken's downtown. Originally envisioned to connect the Business Center, the Train Museum, the proposed Center for African American History, Art, and Culture.
Okay.
Okay.
But I was more concerned about Leslie United.
Okay.
You know, because to me, when I looked at the plan, I didn't see it mentioned, but I saw it highlighted in the plan. I thought maybe that was, you know, that to me, that church has, you know, been a very pivotal part of that community right there.
And I think we all have to keep in mind this is a comprehensive plan, and it is an area with suggested potential development. You know, if they're a volunteer group, nonprofit group that want to promote the Wesley Church, there's nothing to prevent that.
Okay.
This is just showing some idea of potential development for that area over time.
Right.
It's not a commandment as much as it is a suggestion.
And also, just one last comment. If all possible, I would strongly encourage the city to consider, city to put Schofield in the walk. I mean, like the two gentlemen before me, that, you know, those guys grew up there. I even grew up walking from school to the Brothers and Sisters, which is located on Richland, York. I mean, that community still has some rich heritage. And, you know, and the kids that walk from school to the Brothers and Sisters at home, you know, they enjoy the walk. It would be something for them to see how we would beautify the neighborhood and, you know, just to point out more historical marks between Schofield and where the old Aiken Elementary used to be. All right, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Travis, if I might add to what was stated, the corner, on the corner of Richland Avenue and York Street, that used to be, if you remember the old days,
right,
a service station.
Yeah.
And
I also had family staying in one of the homes I was there also.
A service station, there was a house next to it, and the city ended up buying that property, and that's a part. But we also went in and did some paving, did it in an energy, not energy, but in a way that would help our rainwater runoff. And that parking lot that's there was based on an agreement shared by Wesley United Methodist, where they share the parking where folks would probably park to visit that park. So that has been a combined effort with the city of Aiken and Wesley, and the city went in to do that that pavement for the church. It's worked out very well for us, I think.
Yeah, this is beautiful. This is special. It's very beautiful. I'm pleased with that. I just would like to, you know, just to see a little bit more clarity in future plans, and if we all possibly get more advertisement out to the community. But, you know, use your stakeholders a little bit more. I mean, I know that the Planning Commission, you know, and the City Council, if we can get you guys to come out and talk to us a little bit more about what's going on, and we can have input. I guess, you know, we wouldn't stand here today talking about Schofield, you know, if you guys would just let us know what's going on a little bit more outside of the yard signs.
Well, and again, too, Mr. Johnson, we did have everything set up in the hallway and downstairs on several nights for folks to come view.
All right, thank you.
To what Mr. Johnson is saying, people get their information by different vehicles. At one time, we would do it delivering it in the church, and that's no longer the practice anymore. More outreach effort with neighborhood associations and getting into neighborhoods is the best method. But That's no excuse for us not getting out more and doing these association meetings. We have neighborhood associations that's been very effective, and I don't know who has yours in your community, but I know in Tools Hill and several of the areas, they're very active and manage to help us as a vehicle to get information out. So thank you for bringing that to our attention again.
I think maybe utilizing 94.7, that's the gospel station here in town, Shout WAAW, which reaches a large majority of the African-American population, especially in my district. I think that Travis would probably agree that that may be a good vehicle to use.
Mm-hmm. And, Mr. Mayor, I would also add, as might be expected from me, another urgent message to the council that it's another reason why we need to be more transparent with what we do in the community, whether it's televising council meetings, televising planning commission, design review board meetings, and so forth. We have a TV channel that's readily accessible, and even when the Aiken Standard televised council meetings, I got a lot of feedback. Despite the time of day that they were shown, people will watch them. So TV is a great means to communicate with the people.
Mr. Mayor,
yes, sir.
My name is Robert Conway. I live at 104 Spearin Circle. My reason for standing here is that I understand that there are economic situations that you must be concerned about. However, I feel that signage might help us during this period where we could identify historical sites in this area, and by having signs situated on near these areas, it would help again with the historical evaluation of the area. You mentioned those, the two areas, the Smith Hazel area and also Schofield. Right across the street is one of the oldest buildings here, the Masonic Lodge building. Also on the corner of Park Avenue and Union Street, there was a pharmacy there. The doctor's office, I understand there was a hospital right there, right across from the train depot. So what we would like to do is to maybe prepare a list of historical spots right in that area and submit this for consideration as we go forward. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anyone else like to speak? Okay. We have a motion and a second on this issue.
This is for the Union Street plan?
Yes.
Yep.
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve this plan. I thought we were going to include Sumter Street with the Friendship Baptist Church. Is that part of this?
We drew the boundary to include both lots. That's why we advertised it.
Okay.
We can get the update about from the church property after the motion and second, or do we need it before? We delayed this 30 days to be sure the overlapping boundaries. Who is going to speak to that to be sure that got done?
It did get done. Mr. Evans is here. He can confirm that. Yeah. We added that in.
If you look at the schematic,
he's right in the back of the room.
Friendship.
Ed, we need you to come up and address that, please.
I don't know if you need to do it before or after the motion.
I think you want it before.
Okay. Because I want to be sure the gentleman that spoke last time had some definite concerns, which seemed very legitimate.
Right. If you look on page 99 of your agenda materials, you'll see that those properties are included as they requested. The church is concerned because as the boundary was drawn before, it split their property in half. We added those properties, so they are in there, and we did advertise it.
121, Reggie.
I got it.
It's there.
Well, I didn't recognize them as being part of it. I just wanted to be sure they're there.
They are there.
Okay.
Anything to add to that?
The question's answered.
I got a couple of technical questions for Mr. Evans. Yeah. If I look at page 102, do I get 20% of the, and this goes back to where we're talking about Colleton and Orangeburg the other day, is green space is that the land other than parkways? Are the parkways included in the 20% green space on page 102?
I'm not sure where you're coming up with 20%. But
well, I mean, we always talk about 20% has to be green space. Does that apply here, or is that a...
This is just your comprehensive plan of the area. What would be appropriate uses under the plan? You can vary from the plan. The zoning ordinance actually has the 20% green space requirement. That would be for the development of individual lots.
Okay, so as you do that, the 20% would kick.
That's when that kicks in. All right. Not in the comprehensive plan.
Then on page 121, I noticed that Cumberland Lane disappeared. I think that's a state street. It's got one of those SC numbers on it. Is that, should we be accounting for that in the concept plan, since this is a concept plan?
Not sure what you mean by accounting for it. I mean that.
Well, I mean it disappeared, and it's a state highway. It's not on the concept plan, but it's on the existing plan. So I just wondered if we as city council can eliminate a state highway.
No, that would take. This, again, is just your comprehensive plan. But in order to close a street, you would actually have to have an ordinance, and you'd have to have the approval of a state street by the state.
But on page 121, that's the master site concept plan, which is what we're approving. And I asked this question last time, and the concept plan is guidance. I agree.
This just recommends something that could happen. Okay. Adoption of the plan doesn't make it happen. I mean, Cumberland's not going to disappear if you vote to approve this tonight. You'd still have to go through state approval or whatever to make it happen.
Yeah, there'd be a different procedure. You'd have to have public hearings on that. That wouldn't happen as part of this plan.
Okay, so if we decide, if somebody really wanted to build a parking lot and mixed-use development by Giles Park, then we would go through the evils of getting rid of the state road and or moving it or whatever the case would be.
Yeah, that would take further council action. Again, this is only a concept of what it could be.
Okay.
To actually do it would take that process.
All right. And then the concept plan is new to our land use plan, I understand, or master so. And I assume that's okay, Mr. City Attorney. You explained it to me last time, and I'm still hung up a little bit, but it's okay that we do this.
Yes, sir.
And then if there is any rezoning, like for the church's potential to build a property, if that needs rezoning, it would come back to council for rezoning.
That's
but
correct.
If the zoning is okay, then they would work with the which group would they work with to be sure it's got the right building and all of that? Is that go to?
If no zoning change is required, if the property is zoned in a manner that would allow the development of the property the way they want to develop it, all they would need to do is go to see Mr. Evans and get a building permit.
Right. But would it need to go through the, not the housing?
If the property has to be rezoned, it would go through the rezoning process in order to get approval
for we
that.
Have one commission or one group that looks at the type of buildings to be sure the architecture is right.
They may very well end up in a design review board
design
situation.
Review, but it doesn't have to go to design review?
Depends on what zone it's in.
Is all of this property in a design review district?
Yes.
So right, it would have to go to DRB.
It would all go through. I was just curious who's going to look after the... The Design Review Board does an excellent job of keeping the architecture, and Mr. McGee mentioned that and several others.
And I'm sorry, I didn't realize that was your question.
Okay. Well, that's why I'm trying to get it in my brain here, which way it's going. And then back to the property on the church now. That was two zoning areas also, was it not? Because it was split in the middle?
Yeah.
And so
that whole block is zoned general business now.
All right. So
one of the recommendations of the plan is now that whole block would become downtown business. That would take a separate vote by city council.
All right. So if the church wanted to expand, then they would need to come back to council to get a general business on that. But they now would have the right to do that if they wanted to.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. I just want to be sure we haven't omitted anybody out of the process. Okay, thank you.
I have a couple of questions. I want to make sure I understand about the design review board. If we approve this document, then anything developed in this area is under the purview of the design review board.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Ed, correct me if I'm wrong. That's true now. Right. That's true without you approving this document.
Secondly,
it's in the historical.
It's already in, it's already in,
it's
the,
already
design
in the historical districts that are applied. Yeah.
Correct.
Their jurisdiction.
Secondly, as I mentioned last time we talked about this, I have a major concern with parking. I just don't see how there's going to be enough parking in this area as this plan proceeds to full development. I'm not concerned about Sunday morning. Somehow that all works itself out with all the churches using the streets. But do you see an issue ultimately of running out of parking? There's several comments in here that says parking within the Union Street area should be limited to on-street spaces in interior or side yard lots with no on-site parking in front of the building. That was on page 126. There was another comment in here earlier talking about a parking garage that additional parking will be needed to support the new development on page 119. And someplace else I didn't mark it down. City parking lot, I guess. It said new development will require additional parking. Where do we get the parking from?
The area west of Union Street now is zoned downtown business, and there's no off-street parking required today. And the plan shows adding some parking west of Union Street, so that would help with that situation. The area east of Union Street, again, is proposed to be rezoned from general business to downtown business, which, again, would not require any off-street parking. But the plan does show the parking lot proposed between Union and Kershaw, so that's additional parking. Whether that's enough parking, hard to answer. But the plan does show more parking than is out there today.
But we have, it would be within the purview of the Design Review Board to deny an application to build something if there was not adequate parking for that particular business?
No, they would only, their purview would only be the design of the buildings. They couldn't turn somebody down for not providing enough parking.
So, what would we do if the parking was saturated?
Not sure how to answer that. I mean, if you rezone the area east of Union Street to downtown business, there won't be any off-street parking required. By right, they could build and not have any off-street parking.
And am I correct in saying that as I read this document, for example, as we park on Newbury Street right now in front of, let's say, Newbury Hall, that you park in front of the building. Did I read in here correctly that there's no parking in front of businesses in this area?
Can you tell me where you're referring?
I can't tell you where I'm Sunday afternoon, we're going through the packet. But is parking allowed in front of buildings?
I don't. Certainly there's nothing in the zoning ordinance that would prevent that. I don't think there's anything in the plan that would prevent that. I mean, there's some angle parking shown on street in the plan. So, you know, I don't think there's anything certainly nothing in the plan that would stop it. And I don't think there's anything that would discourage it.
Okay, and my last comment, the first speaker of the night seemed to make some very cogent remarks. None of us had time to really look at them and study them, but would you promise us you'd do that? And if there's any changes that you think would be appropriate, can we address them at least?
Can you remind me what his comment was?
He gave us several pages of comments on the plan, and Sarah has them, and they'll be part of the minutes.
Mr. McGee,
is that no? The first gentleman. Oh.
The first gentleman who had to spell his name because I couldn't pronounce it.
Sure.
I would just want us to take a look at those comments, and incorporate where we can. I'm sensitive to the fact that he took a lot of time to do it, right, and I'd like to give him the respect of evaluating what he's given us. That's all I have. I mean, it's just I share Councilman Ebner's comment about
I'm somewhat being confused with what we're doing and concept plan and zoning, and I mean, these get to be kind of technical issues, and we need your guidance to get us through them. But I mean, I like the idea of developing the area around Union Street. I like the plan, and my major concern is the parking. But
okay. Any? I think we do have another speaker, perhaps.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Willie Alma Jones Finney. I'm standing before you as a representative of my mother, Georgia E. Johnson, who resides and is a landowner of the property which you are referring to for various buildings and parking lots, and as if it was not a residential home site. We've not received any letters of discussion about the acquisition of our property, but for the past 20, 30 minutes now, I'm hearing that property being referred to as if it is under acquisition by the plan which you are about to or attempting to pass tonight. So that street, that lane, that roadway that runs between Union Street and Kershaw Street, which was at one time a dirt path to access the home built by my stepfather, which was later paved at the constant urging and request of my mother and others who resided in the area. I'm not certain what my point is, except that I've heard of a term where the city has right of way easement, and you can take some parts of property to extend a roadway, and you acquire a little bit of land on the outskirts of one's property. But this plan that I'm hearing and viewing is seemingly one that is intending to incorporate the home. So perhaps someone can enlighten me, allay all what might even be fears of the home being
You can speak to that.
Yeah, Ms. Finney, this is a comprehensive plan for potential use of the property in the future.
Potential.
Yeah, there's no condemnation. Nobody's taken any property. It's just since that railroad depot was put there, there was a discussion years ago about once that visitor center was in place and the train museum was there, what would you do with the surrounding area? That's when city council had a joint meeting with the planning commission, and one thing that was decided as a to-do item was to do this study of the area, get public input from the folks who live in the area, the folks who would be affected by potential future development, and then come up with this plan. It's a comprehensive plan. It's what could be there, not what is going to be there.
So then rest at ease and expect that once the plan is enacted, that we should be contacted about how the property, which is now home, might be somehow
impacted.
Well, and again, to the extent that anybody would ask for rezoning or have a project that they were putting in, we do send notice out. That's required by state law. But of course, you know, the property that your family owns is your property. So until you sell it to somebody else, it's your property.
Okay, well, because I heard this rezoning, and it's residential now, but if the city passes something that makes the area that we now live in and is our residence and it becomes rezoned as some other type of commercial property for the development that has been so beautifully outlaid,
That's not part of this comprehensive plan. There's no rezoning taking place tonight. It's just a concept of what that area of the city could look like at some time in the future. There's no deadline for that. If there were any rezoning, yes, you would be notified of that.
And I'm not sure the city is in the market to buy anything. Most of these developments would be by, you know, individual developers and contractors. That's my understanding. You know, some corporation or some developer has to come in. You know, this is what we'd like to see, but the city's not going to be doing the development, as far as I understand it.
No.
Am I wrong?
You are right. You are right.
Well, that mother. Okay. Well, thank you.
Did you get it?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else?
Yeah, just one final comment. When we approve this plan, given that it's going to increase the responsibilities of the design review board, will we give courtesy copies to the members of that board?
Oh, of this plan?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. That would be materials that'd be available. We have this on the website.
Yeah. Okay.
That'll be available for public view as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Certainly.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to make a motion.
You did.
Well,
go ahead.
In terms of amending the comprehensive plan, but taking into account some comments that Mr. Johnson and Mr. Mm-hmm. McGee has made regarding the Heritage Interpretive Walk, since we've taken the liberty of listing all these other locations, we have Wesley United Methodist and the Center for African Americans shown on the map here. Why not just list those two in the bullet, and Schofield and Smith Hazel? So there's four additions to this interpretive walk. That would be Schofield, which is already stated in the recommendations. The Center for African American History, Art, and Culture, West United Methodist Church, and Smith Hazel Center.
Okay, that's your motion.
Yes, sir.
To add those. Okay, do we have a second?
I second.
Okay. Any discussion?
I just want to make sure Ed doesn't have any concerns about adding those as part of the plan.
Wait, and that's just to the Heritage Walk.
Right. You're not expanding the study area. You're just listing those.
It's shown on the map, but it's not shown here in the.
You want to add it to the bullet points, Ms. Price?
Yes.
That's your motion.
Okay. All right. We have a motion and a second. No more comments. Show of hands, please. All in favor? Approval. Okay. Passes unanimously. Okay. I want to thank everyone that spoke. Appreciate your comments very much.
The next item, Mayor, was the second reading for the 18.85 acres owned by CSW Inc. And as we said, that's been carried over to a future meeting to be determined.
Right. So we go into new business, the 2012-13 goals from Horizons. City goals.
Thank you, Mayor. At the Horizons retreat on the second day, you typically set short-term and continuing goals that we incorporate in our budget discussions and budget preparations, and you have those listed here today, and these are a result of our discussions at Horizons. So for approval tonight would be, for consideration tonight would be approval of these goals for inclusion in the budget.
Okay. Do we have a motion and a second for approval?
Move, Mr. Mayor.
I second.
Okay. Any discussion?
Yeah, I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
Under short-term goals number 5, what do we mean by identify opportunities to work with at-risk individuals in our community? What specifically does that entail?
That was our discussion about, you know, with the recent acts of violence that we've seen, to find appropriate ways to how the city can support intervention. Some cities have an intervention program. Some cities have after-school and mentoring programs, whatever that would be. We're trying to identify what those opportunities would be to provide venues. We've already been in some initial discussions with area nonprofits and the academic community. That's what it's referring to.
Okay. On the continuing goals on item number one, where we talk about the next phases for installation of bioretention, bioswale, rain garden, and other stormwater runoff containment measures, I'm not aware of any that have ever been discussed at council. We seem to have done, I think, all that we can in the downtown area that impacts the main entrance into Hitchcock Woods. Are there other areas in the city that we would propose to do this that would impact stormwater runoff in Hitchcock Woods?
Yes, there are several of the entire ring around the Hitchcock Woods when you think about it. The bioretention efforts that we have done outside of City Hall, up at headquarters, at the parking lot on Lawrence, were a pilot project. That was grant money that we received. And you're right, it has been very effective, but we've got other areas that channel water into the woods.
Oh, I know we do, but my comment, I guess, was the use of the words, and again, I'm not an engineer, but for example, the next worst one I would guess would probably be Dibble. Have we given serious thought to what we would want to do at the Dibble Road entrance to Hitchcock Woods?
Dibble Road is the reason we bought the Peggy's Pond property when it comes time to remediate in Hitchcock Woods and then come up with a permanent use for that property as well. And when you think of runoff, you know, think about starting here. So you still have the Coker Springs entrance. You still have the Clark Road entrance. You've got an entrance in Hounds Lake North and in Fox Chase. All of these we could take a look at that. Clark Road entrance has some fairly significant issues as well. Okay. And again, that would just allow us to continue. You know, we do have money in the 1 cent sales tax that will be coming
yes,
in.
Yes.
So if we could cut it off at the source, whatever remediation we do would be more of a permanent solution than a stopgap measure, kind of like the beach renourishment has
sure.
turned out being at the coast. We would rather have more of a permanent solution.
And these, I assume, are not listed by priority. They're just listed as?
Just listed.
When you can get to them.
Just listed. There's no significance. It's probably more just the order we discussed them in.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
And Dick, you know that we had talked, there's been some talk about maybe doing some more of our parkways, if mm-hmm. necessary.
Yes, yeah.
I'm kind of waiting for some results. You know, we really haven't seen any definitive results lately.
If I could.
How good it's working. We know it's working. Yeah, anything you can add. Go ahead.
Mayor, if I could address that, I just had a meeting last week with
Doctor.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just drew a complete blank from Dr. Eidson from Clemson University. And we've just, there's no cost to the city for doing this, but we've just expanded the scope of the research with the results through mid-May. We expect a report this summer. But quite frankly, the system works so well and it's so absorbent, we don't get runoff to measure. I mean, there's just water not going into the storm pipes. In particular, the pervious pavement where the parking areas are these huge sponges, and the water's not going into the storm water system. So we're hoping for some more rain events to see. Gene Eidson is the doctor. I'm sorry I had that hesitation. But in any event, they need additional time just because the water's not going through the pipe, which is what you want the green infrastructure to do. So I would anticipate by summer we'll have a final report from them.
Well, that sounds good, then. That sounds good.
It's very encouraging.
Okay, any other comments on that? Okay, we have a motion and a second. Show of hands, please, all in favor. Passing. Unanimously.
Mr. Wells and Ms. Price, rather.
Yeah. Okay, under petitions request, we've got a request to expand the use of electronic sign at USC Aiken Convocation Center. Mr. Pierce, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Back in 2003, City Council approved the provision of services to land. It's about a 50-acre tract owned by the University of South Carolina, Aiken. As part of that, there was a sign to be placed, and the university agreed that that sign would comply with the zoning ordinance. And they came up with this new technology, an electronic sign, and we really didn't have anything in the zoning ordinance that specifically addressed the type of electronic sign that the university was going to put in place. So in 2006, Planning Director Evans issued zoning ordinance interpretation number 39 regarding electronic signs. As part of his interpretation of what was in the zoning ordinance, he ruled that the message could be changed no more than once per day. Officials are here from the university, including the Chancellor Tom Hall, and they would like council to reconsider that initial approval for utility services, require them to follow the interpretation of Mr. Evans from 2006 to let you know changes that they have seen in their operation at the Convocation Center and what they would request council approve so they can make best use of the sign they do have installed. And Chancellor,
okay.
Chancellor Hallman is here.
By the way, while you're coming up, congratulations on the bridge ceremony and the ribbon cutting today. That's going to be so wonderful for the community, no doubt, and for the school.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the participation of folks from this council. I'm Tom Hallman. I'm the Chancellor at the University of South Carolina, Aiken, and I'm also a resident of 155 Overlook Drive.
I'm sorry. Stuart, could you pull the PowerPoint up? I'm sorry, Chancellor.
I've got some PowerPoint slides, but I'd like to move through them pretty quickly. Mr. Pierce has succinctly summarized our concern. We installed this sign when the Convocation Center was completed. We were seeking a sign. Let me assure you, we've had some experience with signs where you change the letters one message at a time, and electronic is a whole lot better. There's no question. We've got one on the University Parkway side, it's not subject to this restriction because it was not under this particular agreement with the city. It's in the county. The USCA Convocation Center sign you see right here, is officially a programmable message board. We've got events not only at the Convocation Center but at the Roberto Hernandez baseball field and the Pacer Path, which is a cross-country path on that side of the campus. The 24-hour restriction limits certainly the capability of this sign. We could do a great deal more information for all of the events because it's, well, we'll see in a moment, because it's a large facility. There are three athletic sectors involved on that side of the road. There are a number of different events that happen, sometimes one day after the next, and sometimes within the same day, and we really need the capability to change the sign more frequently. This meets to the point of a moment ago. There are multiple places where we would want to direct passersby to what's going on at the university on that side of the road, and having only one message every 24 hours is not sufficient to do that. We think there are some, we don't question the motivation of why this might have been a good way to start when we didn't know much about these signs, but we would like to make the case that this particular location for this electronic sign is unique in that this is a university campus, it is a standalone sign. There are non-university related folks who come to our campus and need this sort of information. There's no residential or commercial property on either side of the road at that point. We believe it is a special case and merits some unique consideration. We're outside of a number of traffic signals. We don't have people being distracted by other things. And we think it will make a positive impact. We've got folks from Global Spectrum who have events that they would like to promote. We'd like to be sure that people passing by that road understand what's going on. We want them to know that the USC Aiken campus is a contributing part of this community in a number of sectors. What we're here requesting tonight is that we be able to change the message about every 6 seconds. That would give us 10 changes a minute. We don't think the average passerby would see more than two messages, but we could have a number of messages in the course of a day that would be promoted to all of those who pass by. We've chosen the 6-second interval because that's a standard that the State Department of Transportation uses on similar signs elsewhere across the state. We don't think it's unreasonable. It's not a figure pulled out of the air. It's something that's actually in practice elsewhere. We appreciate any consideration you could give us on this, and I've brought some reinforcements to be sure that I could answer any questions that you might have. Thank you very much for the time, the opportunity to address you on this issue.
Tom, thank you so much. I think you described your situation very well myself. And I think this is a special case. And, you know, as I read what we used back in 06, I don't really see anything that would say that we could not increase this. Certainly this is, you might consider this, it doesn't say anything about schools, of course, or basketball or anything, but it does say public service. It seems like to me that is about as close to what you're actually doing. Except, I mean, it says accept signs giving. It says some are disallowed, except signs giving public service, if I'm reading this correctly, information such as time, temperature, date, weather, similar information, intermittent with low-intensity light. Again, it talks about public service nature, and certainly it's a public service nature to the school and for what's going on at the school, because all you have to do is go to a basketball game and see all those thousands of people there, which it was at the 50th anniversary basketball game. But now, unless, you know, there's something else that I'm missing from what we used, you know, back then, in favor of changing it.
I just have a comment. As I recall, back then, we were under the notion that folks reading the sign would be distracted. It could be a safety concern. We had no basis to rule that on, except that it was just a notion that some of us had discussed amongst ourselves as a council body. Mm-hmm. And certainly, as I drive around and I see these kinds of signs display, I don't have any evidence to prove that it's going to be unsafe. Mm-hmm. As you pass by and visit, read those 6-second messages that you get.
So. And at that time, of course, folks were walking across the road to get there, which was a dangerous situation. And that's now, of course, that's why the bridge is so important. And that would kind of take that problem out of the consideration, I would think, certainly.
And Dr. Holman, I would certainly appreciate your ability to be able to expand the sign, because I'm a big Pacer fan, as you well know. And I rely on that signage to keep me up to date as when the basketball games are. And the last few days it had basketball and baseball together, and it's all jumbled together, and it just makes me crazy when I pass there. So I would appreciate, you know, your being able to change that.
We'll be happy to accommodate you, Ms. Diggs.
Thank you.
And Dr. Holman, I would assume that you would reserve the right to use this sign as you'd like, given that there'll be no more than a change every 6 seconds or 10 seconds, whatever it is. If you wanted to put just one event on that sign all day, you could do that.
Yes,
or you could change it every 3 hours or what have you.
That's a critical thing, and I should have included that in my presentation. The fact that we can change it every 6 seconds does not always mean that we would move to do that, although I think a fair amount of the time we have a multitude of messages we'd like to get out, but there certainly would be times when we would take a longer span,
sure.
Probably not 24 hours, but longer.
Understand. Thank you.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve this.
Second, Mayor.
Okay, more discussion.
From the point of the Constitution, freedom of press, freedom of religion, I drove specifically down certain streets where Millbrook is and the elementary school and that, and we have both signs available there. And even at the time this was written, these signs have been...
Those aren't electronic signs. Millbrook Baptist Church has an electronic sign.
Yeah, electronic, and then around where the old church is, they got the old billboard that's been there probably longer than I've been around.
Right.
And if you read this, this even restricts you from changing that except every 24 hours. And I guess, you know, the state has obviously allowed this for years here. Is the whole ordinance out of order for today?
It's part of your city zoning ordinance, though.
Right. The you can limit speech so long as you use a reasonable time and manner type of restriction, not what somebody is saying, but the size of the sign that they put it on, the location of the sign where they put it on.
Yeah, but
that
here,
sort of thing.
The newer churches now have the electronic signs.
Right.
And Millbrook is a good example because there's one on Whiskey that's electronic.
Millbrook will be the next person to come see you, would be my guess,
okay.
depending on what council does tonight with this particular sign.
Wait, can I just interject, too? This is part of a utilities request. You know, if somebody wanted relief from the zoning ordinance, they could petition for a variance to do so. But this is a utilities request.
So in other words,
that's why council's voting on it.
But I've had several businesses that didn't realize they could do that.
Well, they probably can't do that because of the zoning ordinance provisions. It's just in providing the utilities to this property, the university agreed to abide by the zoning ordinance. They're just seeking some relief for that, based on their public service message that they're...
I assume Millbrook did, and Walgreens, and all these others.
No, they're in the city limits, so they're subject to the zoning ordinance.
So he's not in the city limits?
No, this is part of
this
a utility...
This is part of a water use agreement.
That's why city council has the jurisdiction to rule on this.
All right, so other businesses can't change?
They can certainly meet with Mr. Evans to see whether it's appropriate to seek a variance. They could go that route if they wanted.
If I read this, it says that even with a billboard, you can only change it once in 24 hours. And that's that true?
You don't have any billboards in the city of Aiken on city-owned property in the city. You may have one.
The ruling, the interpretation that Mr.
Reader board. I don't know the difference is the...
That's okay. Mr. Evans's interpretation only affects electronic signs.
But he says he compared it to a reader board, and I don't know what a reader board is, I guess. I went by Aiken Elementary, and they've got a sign out there that you got to go out there with a stick and change. Yeah. Is that a reader board?
That's what the chancellor was referring
okay,
to.
Okay, and so they can only change that once every 24 hours.
I guarantee on that one, they don't want to change it anymore.
That's why you get the one where it says, the boss told me to change the sign, so I did.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure, and the picture show has the same thing. They go out there and they change it a couple times a day, and that's okay. That's in the city, I know.
That is in the city, That's a reader board, not an electronic board.
I agree. So any reader board can be changed multiple times during the day.
Mr. Evans can speak to that. He's nodding his head, yes, and he's the interpreter, so I defer to him.
Okay. But
I would ask that we spell out the distinction in our minutes clearly, with this being a utility board, because certainly other folks are going to come to us and say, I want a sign too, and based on this exception here, the property is not in the city, and that's why we're going to approve this request, I hope so.
Mm-hmm. You could accept that as part of your motion, that
okay.
distinction.
All right. Okay. Any other comments? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously.
Thank you very much.
Could you make one of those messages about city council?
For good people?
Yeah, something like that.
How many times a year would you like us to do that?
We don't hear that yet.
Every other 6 seconds.
No. You're not going to advertise.
Take that under advice.
No. They have hot dogs for sale and all that stuff.
Well, something close to that.
Thank you all for being with us. Thank you. Okay. We had a couple of items we wanted to be talked about, recusals.
Yes. Back, I guess, early January, and this was in relation to the some work that Aiken Corporation is doing. For instance, looking to refinance the loan and pay off the loan. And it also gets into other business. And I guess I'm more sensitive than other people because I still do consulting work where I go out and look at a contract, and I may interview the people that do it, so I'm directly involved with handling the money of a profit organization. And Aiken Corp has a nonprofit arm and a profit arm, which is the LED. I talked to Mr. Smith about, do I have to recuse myself once we start talking about this loan? And the original comment was, well, yeah, you should. You know, it could be conceived that I'm voting in one place to give money to the Aiken Corp and taking it away from the city. And then in a subsequent email, Mr. Smith reconsidered that and said, well, probably it's not. And so what I'd like to do is I think it'd be wise to get this clarified from the Ethics Commission and go ahead and get that done. And then the next Aiken Corp meeting is the second Wednesday of March. And I caused quite a bit of stir at the meeting doing that. And, I would like to put that to rest if I could.
If I could expand on my comment just a little bit, just so you have some better comfort with that. Back when we were initially considering modifying the loan rate last fall, Ms. Price came to me because of her association with URS. And she wanted to make sure that she was okay being involved with the voting on the loan with the Aiken Corporation, that sort of thing. I did write a letter to the State Ethics Commission legal counsel, and the question was put to her. I've got a lady that works for that's on city council who is a board member with the Aiken Corporation that she works for URS, and URS is the tenant of the building that's involved. And y'all know all of this information, but I'm just sharing with you what I shared with her. And the question was whether or not she had a conflict of interest being involved at that level, and the reply was that she did not. She did not simply because her... If there was something that created a conflict, it was because she was a tenant of someone who paid rent, or she was an employee of someone who paid rent, the tenant who paid rent. And they did not find that rose to the level, but they had no qualms with her serving as a city council member and serving as a member of the board of the Aiken Corporation, and I think that's what applies to you. So we've already gotten that opinion from the State Ethics Commission. I'd be happy to rewrite the letter to clarify that for you if that would make you feel better, but I just felt with that letter in hand that I didn't need that clarification.
Well, and I didn't have the letter. It probably helped me at the time. I think since this has come up, and I did make an issue of it to the Aiken Board, and Ms. Price and I did leave the meeting, I think it would be good to re-clarify that for the instance in question.
Sure.
And that can be the background for it, and then if you could get that and send Mr. Brody a copy of that, I'd really appreciate it. It'd make my life easier. I don't want to embarrass anybody.
It'd be helpful if I could just be copied in.
Sure.
Thank you. That's all I had.
Okay. And I think
just a quick question. The Aiken, the Arts Commission minutes that were in our packet on January 3rd made a comment regarding on page 2 regarding the meeting rooms that we are going to build downstairs. And there was a comment made that I didn't understand. Mr. Parker stated he doubted that we could make meeting rooms where 350 to 500 people could meet because of the fire code. And I guess my question is, given this building
and given our plans, would we be inhibited by the fire code from being able to build a meeting room capability downstairs that would house 350 to 500?
Mr. DeWire, I didn't know you were going to have that question.
I know you didn't.
All I can tell you is I'll talk with the fire code folks and just find out. It would depend, of course, on the access to the building, the exit doors, and you know, the kind of flow it could handle. And again, once we clear out downstairs, it gives us kind of a blank sheet to work from, with the exception of like the elevator shaft. And of course, we do have some existing restrooms. In any event, we can certainly look into that. I'm not real sure why Mr. Parker shared that with the committee.
It's
not a discussion he and I have had, but we can certainly check with the fire code folks. And Chief Barranco's here, and he knows the email he's going to have from me, which is, would you please check in?
Okay.
But we'll get an answer.
That's just
on
an interesting question, because I think we do have a need for being a place to meet 350 to 500, and I hope that the fire rules wouldn't inhibit that.
Well, and certainly we can get an idea with the square footage we have and potential access points we have to see.
Yeah, that might affect the design and so forth.
It will.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a good point.
That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, and I think
before we close it out, let's be sure we analyze that, because part of this was to get to that number, and it's a matter of how many doors you put in. So let's don't rule it out, is what I'm saying. Be sure we analyze it from the other aspect of adding doors.
I promise you I haven't ruled out anything. I'm just trying to have a space for us to move into that's appropriate space. That's kind of phase two.
Okay. We are adjourned.
Thank it's you. Not 1 o'clock yet.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know it. Let's get out quick.